before, but always hit the floor. I've spent a lifetime running, and I always get away. But with you I'm feeling something that makes me wanna stay.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are, this is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen, and not a one of you is prepared for it.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road, and you know, anyway. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
This is Drew. And tonight, we're going to tackle the 24th Bond movie, Spectre, 2015, directed by Sam Mendes.
Ah, Heidi, you are too Spectre.
Oh, man.
So, whose movie is this? I think it's Brother Jay, since he's the Bond...
Only indirectly.
Yeah. So you're the Bond guy. Do you want to take it away, or do you want me to? I actually watched it on Monday with our mother, and I have notes from her as well.
Oh, cool. Excellent. It's the latest, last, newest Bond film. I saw it in the movie theater, but I honestly don't remember who I was with. So, no, I don't know. I remember it not being an impressive movie. I was... underwhelmed by it at the time. I was a little less underwhelmed this time. I think there's some obvious parts of the movie that I took issue with because it was just ripping off other Bond movies in an attempt to carry forward the story, which, all right, maybe a little bit of that's okay. But then the end of this movie, which very clearly sets up the beginning of another movie. So... And not just in the typical Bond fashion, but as in this would be the very next logical progression to a reworked existing Bond movie. So, in my opinion.
And what movie would that be?
On Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Interesting.
The end of this movie, and I'll spoil it for everybody. Haha, spoilers. The end of this movie is where the beginning of On Her Majesty's Secret Service might start.
So is...
Or maybe it's the end of Honor Majesty's... See, now I'm getting so old.
Well, but, okay. Is Mrs. Swan, is she the... is she Tracy?
Yes.
Okay. I realize she's Dr. Swan, but in my...
I know.
Yeah. I could not help but call her Miss Swan the whole time.
Hi, Miss Swan. I'm Officer Tamarind. I need to get a description from you, and it's only going to take us a few minutes, all righty?
I saw 18, okay.
Oh, great. Great. Can you describe the perpetrator to me, ma'am?
Yeah, he looked like a man.
Okay, he was a man.
Yeah,
okay.
18, I tell you, I saw.
Good, good. Was he a tall man or a short man?
Yeah, no.
Yes, he was a tall man, and
okay.
No, he wasn't a short man.
No, yeah, everything I saw, everything.
Okay. I mean the man who robbed this place today.
Okay.
What did he look like?
Yeah, okay, he looked like a man.
We all love Miss Swan, or at least we all should.
Yeah, I think so. Brother Drew, what's your initial thought on Spectre?
I don't think anybody involved in this movie actually wanted to make this movie. No, maybe Dave Bautista.
Oh, Dave Bautista was arguably one of the better parts of this movie.
I think he only had one line in the whole movie.
That's a perfect Dave Bautista role, though.
No, I understand, but...
Yeah.
Duh, shit. Like,
I thought this movie was completely soulless and boring. And a waste of fine talent like Christoph Waltz and Monica Bellucci.
Well, I was pretty harsh on this movie when I first saw it, because it is long and it has lots of issues, including pacing. In fact, I noted in my notes from Monday that at one point, even Bond fell asleep during this movie.
Mm-hmm.
That is, of course, an issue. But I think there's some really good parts of this movie.
It tries to almost exactly duplicate the Skyfall formula, but none of it works. None of it works like Skyfall did.
It's trying to take Skyfall, but it's trying to also fold in some other stuff. And mm-hmm. as we've learned, you can't do that. Like, the reason why Skyfall, I think, is still the best Bond movie is that it has all of the visual iconography of Bond without having the goofy tropes.
Like, Skyfall had history to it, but they weren't dragging the history to the present to put it in the present movie to further the story. It just happened to be incidental to the movie. Bond's past and M's past and Silva's past. Where this movie, they bring the past into this movie. Mr. White.
Yeah, they shoehorn a lot of stuff into this movie.
I mean, there's lots of stuff that just gets brought forward. And then they do that Neil Simon murder by death, introduce a new plot at the end of the movie that had no foundation in the beginning of the movie. Although they did try a little bit to fold in the history prequel of, you know, Bond being the brother of Blofeld, which, again, spoiler, which I don't know. None of that was believable. None of it was charismatic. None of it was enthralling. None of it was compelling. It was just so flat. I didn't feel emotionally engaged at all. I didn't feel the characters were emotionally engaged. I didn't feel there was really any peril. I didn't feel that the Bond was really in peril, and I didn't believe that Swan believed she was really all that much in peril. Although, you know, there was a little bit of danger here and there, but I don't know.
This had some screenwriting issues. Nobody was satisfied with the third act, so they brought in Purvis and Wade, who had written a bunch of other Bond scripts, to come in and do a punch up or whatever, and then we were left with what we're left with. But it definitely seems like the end was tacked on. And when we get there, I have some specific thoughts about the end of this movie. But Drew, you indicated that you don't think people in this movie had clean hands. I thought everybody had clean hands. I just think they were trying to do too much, and the studio gave them too much money to do it.
No, I don't. Daniel Craig didn't look like he wanted to be there.
Well, Daniel Craig got hurt. He like tore his ACL or something, he blew out his Achilles or something. So he actually is walking around Mexico because he literally can't run around Mexico.
Everybody's performance is so flat that I blame the director. So I assume the director didn't want to be there either.
Well, they had suggested Christopher Nolan.
Yeah, because this movie wants Bond to beat Batman. So that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that's how I feel about the end of this movie. But shall we dive into the plot? Unless yeah, you guys have more preparatory stuff.
No, let's get this over with.
I want to clarify. So, the end of this movie sets up what I believe to be the scenario that engages what I believe will be the next movie, or might have been the next movie, depending, which is Honor Majesty's Secret Service, because that whole Bond takes a bride, takes a wife, takes a girlfriend long-term. Motif is what ended up being the end of On Her Majesty's Secret Service, which is where, of course, she ends up being killed.
Exactly.
At the end of the movie. So I believe that this movie was an entire vehicle, no pun intended, just to get the next movie remade as On Her Majesty's Secret Service. And if that's the case, it's going to be even worse than Lazenby.
Well, no. So how about this? Okay. Now, I know this is not going to happen because apparently Daniel Craig's already signed up to do this next movie.
Well, he's signed up, but that doesn't mean he's going to do them. They might not go with him.
Wait, real quick before your point, Eric. Is that vintage car, is that the same car that Bond's wife was killed in?
I think so. A DB5? Yeah, it would make sense.
Okay. So, your point, sorry?
No, well, my point is this. Nothing would make me happier to see Idris Elba turn right to the screen, right to the camera, looking me in the eyes on a 30-foot screen and say, well, this didn't happen to the other guy.
You mean when he's pulled over by the police for driving a nice car?
Too real. Now we're, it did, okay.
Nice.
Not if it, nice. Only if it's set in America. Please don't bring real world into. It's been a rough week for the real world. So
sorry.
No, it's okay. It's hilarious. God. But you know the thing about what was her name? What was the Emma Blunt or something? Who was the lady that actually killed Tracy Bond?
Oh, I don't even remember.
Yeah, but she was, you know, I want to see her. Who's the modern day Ruth Buzzy that would be that character? That's where we're going to try to bring Tilda Swinton into the movie again. So,
yeah, I would have gone with like Helen Mirren or something.
No, I was thinking like a Ruth Buzzy type. So maybe a Kate McKinnon with a really bad German accent. So this movie starts out, and let me just say right in the beginning, I like this cold open.
Yeah, cold open wasn't bad.
I think this movie starts out great. He's in Mexico City. It's a Day of the Dead parade, which, by the way, is not a thing, but that's okay. It's cool. It's a movie. It's a fantasy. It's fine. Apparently the writers confused the Day of the Dead ceremony, which is a real religious holiday where the banks are closed and everything, with Carnival, where there's dancing in the streets. But that's okay. Again, we see, I think, great costumes. We know who the guy in the skull mask is because you can't hide those ears. And we have, I don't know, a very... I mean, you've got that whole colonial architecture in Mexico City. Mexico, by the way, they lobbied hard to get this movie to shoot down there. So they made a lot of allowances. So we have a man and a woman go into the hotel room for some hooking up action.
Also, this is stolen from Moonraker.
As far as?
Jaws was he in Rio for Carnival?
Oh, maybe.
Because he, remember, he neck bites, he tries to neck bite the...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, like, again, this movie is all recycled Bond.
Oh, yeah. No, I think they go, Sam...
They go back to the well so many times that I'm sure that Timmy's no longer there.
Sam Mendes said the opening he was inspired by A Touch of Evil, but I don't know. Anyway, so Bond goes in for some bed spring squeaking, but has to just put the girl on hold for a moment while he goes and tends to something. And by the way, the beginning is that one continuous shot, which I really like. And then so Bond like walks out onto the like ledge, and he's got
he walks out and adjusts his suit and cuffs, and he's ready for action.
He adjusts his cuffs, which I really like. If I ever wear a suit, I'm going to adjust my cuffs at appropriate moments, or every moment.
Now that whole sequence where they set up the eavesdropping observation assassination, which is thwarted by cigar smoke.
Yes.
Which seems ridiculously stupid, but we'll go with that. Then the building facade collapses and it turns into campy Monty Python, where he falls onto a couch, which is couch surfing at its worst.
Very nice. The quotable line. What I think at that moment, I put in my notes that I know who Daniel Craig reminds me of, finally. Daniel Craig is Norman Fell.
Look, Stanley, you've been lying around all morning, and you promised me that you'd paint the outside of the building today.
Well, the day's not over.
Yeah, but you've been promising all year.
Well, the year's not over.
How long can you stand to look at something so faded and drab?
I don't know. How long have we been married?
Norman Fell is probably most known for his role as Mr. Roper.
Oh, God.
He's also in a whole bunch of other movies, but
yes,
Mr. Roper, I mean, look at Daniel Craig. Give him a couple years. He is Mr. Roper. But when he lands on that couch, to me, he looks like he's like, you know, Helen.
But and then they go from the then they have the chase in the square and the helicopter and then all whatever. That's fine. But is it really wise to kill the helicopter pilot? Is that really something you're going to do?
Well, James Bond can fly anything, so all he's got to do is kill the pilot so you can to take over. I don't know. I thought the helicopter stunts were fun. I thought the one criticism I have of the opening was that the CG, you can see all around the edges. That's the problem. Is there so much CG in the opening that it was a little bit distracting. But I like how big the whole thing looked.
I was streaming it, so I didn't notice. So, because my resolution was probably crap.
Just, you know, like I said, it's CG is a tricky thing. You know it when it's there. But then again, you don't want to really blow up a for real building, or have a helicopter go upside down in a crowd of what's supposed to be 100,000 people, which turned out to be 1,500 people multiplied several times by a computer. So. The end of the cold open, before we get to the title sequence, Mom thought that the cold open was a little long. She also, as it turns out, we talked about the subject of Daniel Craig's attractiveness, because we had touched on that last week between the three of us. So I thought, well, what does my mother think of Daniel Craig's attractiveness? And she has a very specific thing about Daniel Craig. Daniel Craig has this little smirk.
Okay, is this going to require therapy when we're done?
No, not at all.
Okay.
No, it's especially noticeable, although it's all throughout the movies, but it's especially noticeable, you know, after he has the big helicopter fight scene and he takes control of the helicopter and is flying away, he has this little self-satisfied smirk on his face. It just...
Mm-hmm. I can picture it.
Yeah, he's smug and she thinks he's smarmy.
Smirky Craig.
I was trying to make my case for Pierce Brosnan being probably my favorite Bond, although I guess the Daniel Craig Bond movies are my favorite Bond movies, but I think Pierce Brosnan is my favorite Bond. And she agreed that she really likes Pierce Brosnan, but more from other things. So there's that. But she thinks that Daniel Craig, even though he's got his movies are the best of the Bond movies, she thinks that he does not have the same presence that Sean Connery or Roger Moore have. It's not just the looks. It's also like the presence on screen. No, it's her opinion.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to judge apples to apples because of the extreme shifts in writing and plot and subject matter, not to mention the fact that the passage of time. So I don't disagree with her. I just... It's hard to gauge. I do like Brosnan quite a bit as Bond, but I do also like Daniel Craig quite a bit as Bond. So, but I'm really, really like I said before, now I'd really like to see somebody else play Bond at this point. And I'd even go for a woman to play Bond. I think that would be, it's great time for Bond to be a woman. It would be challenging. It would be challenging to write that, but. I think it's possible. I think it would be a very good reboot. And it would be, especially in light of Wonder Woman and her success, not to equate Wonder Woman to James Bond, but, I think it's time. It's possible.
Okay. So I think maybe a lot of what we're going to criticize about this movie, the callbacks to, you know, movies that are 40 years old, is that there's a lot of fan service required for Bond movies.
Well, and they didn't pick good things to bring back.
Well, that's the thing, is that you don't know. I mean, this, like, Skyfall really, really nailed it. You know, Skyfall gave you everything you wanted.
They tried to bring back some drama from Skyfall.
Well, this movie has a gigantic tone problem.
Oh, no, I couldn't agree more.
Okay, so... on to the title sequence. And here's where I surprised myself. I didn't hate the song, and I thought the animation was pretty great.
I don't like the song as much as I like the Radiohead version.
I like the song.
But as we've established, I'm biased for Radiohead clearly, so I'm wrong.
Well, I mean, and okay, so listeners, here's the Radiohead song, or at least part of it, now.
dispossessed, taken hold. My hunger burns, a bullet hole. Specter, I'm not a soul. These rumors are suspicious. Anger is a poison. Only truth I could see. It's when you put your lips to me.
The opening title was interesting because it was flashbacks of all the Craig Bond movies.
Is that the first time that's ever happened? That you see the actual scenes from other movies in the title?
Yes. Yeah.
I think that's the fault of this movie. I heard the James Bonding guys talking to Paul Scheer about this movie, and they were... One of the things that they had talked about is how much they love Skyfall, but Skyfall has some serious plot holes in it. And they thought that tying everything back to Blofeld, it was one way you can kind of retcon those plot holes away. Like the fact that Silva was able to like rig the whole train system and the whole computer thing by just one guy, it didn't make a whole lot of sense. But if he had the backing of Spectre and Blofeld, then it makes a lot more sense.
Or maybe he was evil genius that had been working on it for a decade. You're assuming that these are supervillains.
Maybe Skyfall was so good and so well-paced that I didn't care.
Oh, well, exactly, yeah.
Also, there is that.
Yeah, well, true. Yeah, the thing about this movie gives you a lot of time to think.
Too much time to think. About a half an hour too much time to think.
Yeah, I would say almost an hour too much, really, for my liking. But
and a lot of just head-scratching... tonal shifts and unearned plot developments.
Oh man, yeah, we're definitely gonna get there.
Oh god,
yeah. But yeah, it's funny. I like the lyrics of the writings on the wall. I like the tone. Our mother thought that the song wasn't as cheesy as some of the other Bond themes. I thought, well. I don't know. It's got the same thing. It's a kind of a bombastic sort of thing.
He ain't no Sheryl Crow.
Yeah, well, but or actually, see, to my mind, Jack White. Yeah,
he ain't no Adele either.
Yeah, it's hard to follow Adele's Skyfall, but Sam Smith has such crisp control that it's pretty amazing to listen to.
He warbles.
I'm not a fan of the falsetto though.
The warble. That's what I don't like.
Although our mom was like, I don't know if that's a falsetto. That just may be his regular singing range. Yeah, well, maybe. Okay, so now we're going to get to the parts of the movie I don't like.
You mean the other 2 hours?
Exactly, yes.
I just said, Moneypenny appears and brings Bond his Skyfall effects at his apartment.
Yes.
In a very tiny box.
Right off the bat, they're trying to... drag Skyfall into this as if that's going to help them, which it didn't.
Well, no, this is like, what, 2 weeks after Skyfall or something, or a month after Skyfall or whatever.
Right, and then you get M's message from the grave, which just seemed cloyingly manipulative.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you killed her off, you should have committed to that. You killed her off. So instead of killing her off, you killed her off, but you still have her.
It's lazy. It's
yeah.
It's like, I agree. How do we get this plot going?
Yes.
I don't know. Message from the grave? Sounds good.
Since we did such a big fuck up by killing off M, Dame Judi Dench, maybe we'll give the audience a little bit of a bone by, like, here's some more Judi Dench. You're right. It was lazy and ill-conceived.
So what do you think about the new head of the Joint Intelligence Service, Max Denby?
C?
Yeah. First of all, why was he called C?
Because he's a cunt.
Yeah, okay. That's the only reason I could come up with. Because it makes sense otherwise.
The British use cunt differently than the Americans do, so they use it much more liberally.
But they cast Moriarty. There's no way you didn't know he was the bad guy.
That was the hardest thing I had when I first saw this, is because it took me about 10 minutes, and then it snapped into my head that he was Moriarty. And then you're right, Drew. I saw this in the movie theater, and once I realized who he was, I knew he was the bad guy.
Oh, see, I've never seen TV Sherlock, so I didn't know he was in Moriarty. Although, is it worth watching?
BBC's Sherlock. It's fantastic.
Yeah. That's great. Cool.
So is that the one with Benedict Cumberbatch or whatever?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And Martin Freeman?
What did you say? Martin, yes. Martin Lawrence?
Martin!
Put a little tic-tac. I had a different reaction. My reaction was like, who does this guy remind me of? There's somebody very specific this guy reminds me of. And I figured it out. It's Mark Ruffalo. He's got this Mark Ruffalo vibe about him. I didn't want to get him angry.
Because they both have the five head.
The five head, and he has a smile with a little, it's kind of like the opposite of the Daniel Craig, like, pursed lips, smirky, smug smile.
Smarmy is, I think, what you're going for.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's cocky, just, smarmy.
Yeah, but I don't think it's more like sinister. A G-Wiz. Yeah, it's sinister, but it's also kind of a Columbo thing where it's boyish, but yeah, it's also like a little dark thing. But it's probably just a mannerism he really has. Who knows? Anyway, so we know he's going to be the bad guy, and yeah, come on, it's even if you didn't know about Moriarty, it just telegraphed right away.
The only good thing about bringing him back was she had the quote that she wasn't going to let death get in the way of her doing her job. That was the only thing that was good about that.
Well, and she was going to continue to manipulate Bond from beyond the grave.
That was arguably some of the best writing in the whole damn movie.
Probably a Judi Dench ad-lib.
Probably. Apparently he had gone to Mexico to kill that Sciarra guy.
Assassin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And kill him and then go to the funeral to find out who attends the funeral. Which is a pretty dark plot, but then if you have an assassin, that's what you do with him, right?
Yeah.
So he does that. He was on vacation. Bond does a lot of stuff on vacation. He keeps himself busy.
Idle hands.
There you go. We get to see the new intelligence building, and we learn about the plan to create the Nine Eyes program, which allows them to.
It's going to be run by Five Head.
Very nice. Yeah, so Nine Eyes, blah, blah, blah. Government spying is bad.
Really dumb.
Yeah.
Also, Spectre is supposed to be an octopus or squid, so why wouldn't it be Eight Eyes? This is really stupid.
No. Well, eight legs. But
still, you should wear Nine Eyes. Anyway. I know, it probably represents the nine nations involved. Whatever,
yeah,
whatever.
No, it does, stupid. But that's okay, you're
Spectre,
right.
Spectre, Octo, you should have been Octo. Anyway, never mind.
No, I think...
Nobody would agree to this.
Now, doesn't John Cusack hold up a big boombox that has Nine Eyes playing at it at some point? Is that...
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Very good.
Yeah, no, it's a bad idea. Well, no, they will agree to it.
Performed by Peter Dinklage.
Yeah, of course. Or Gary Oldman, who's pretending to be Peter Dinklage. So, yeah, they're going to decommission the 00 program and bring in the Nine Eyes program.
Bond visits the new Q digs.
Yes.
He gets microchipped like a dog.
Yeah, weird. There's weird nano blood stuff. Seems stupid, but oh well. I mean, he doesn't have it in.
They've done this before. They've chipped in before.
Yes. Yes, they have.
So this is also stolen from another movie.
Well, yeah, yeah. Well, it's not stolen. It's an homage.
They did it already. It's not new territory, and it didn't work well the first time.
Well, I do love the fact that Q introduces Bond to the DB10, which is a beautiful Aston Martin. By the way, they only made, I think, 10 of them. And then tells him, oh, yeah, no, that's for 009. You get a watch. It's a nice watch. It tells the time.
Do we? And we never meet 009.
Nope. Which is good, because I see Rowan Atkinson being 009. It's a race.
So, it's a race. I'm winning.
Thank you.
Drew, you and I are laughing. Drew is not amused.
Drew's not a big fan of the rat race. That's okay. Mr. Bean doesn't talk a lot, so it's difficult to do a Rowan Atkinson impression of Mr. Bean material. Yeah, so Bond goes to Sciarra's funeral because he's, even though he's been told, stay in London, you're grounded, you're on restriction, young man.
Give me your gun and your badge.
Exactly. You are too old for this shit. Oh, wait, no, I'm too old for this shit. Anyway, yeah, you're right. That's kind of lazy writing, too.
They're pretty much just too old to shit at this point.
Yeah, it's action movie trope number 19. So we go and to Sciarra's funeral. And we meet Sciarra's widow. We meet Lucia, played by Monica Bellucci, who is from The Passion of the Christ and the second and third Matrix movies. And she is lovely and stylish, and she's kind of throwaway Bond girl.
She is wasted.
Well, she's wasted for sure, but she's also...
The oldest Bond girl?
Well, I don't want to say oldest, but she is. Not old, but she's definitely... Out of the cadre of very young Bond women, she is characteristically not in any way in any of the set of the previous Bond women, which is fine. I mean, I have no problem with it, but it just seemed atypical of his type. So basically, this intimates that Bond will stick his dick anywhere.
Well,
which I think is probably the truth.
I think that's we call that canon. No, we don't call his dick canon. We call it canon. And anyway, so. The thing about Monica Bellucci is she's old is fine. She's beautiful. She's still beautiful, and she's beautiful and she's exotic. So she makes the perfect Bond girl. But in a 2.5-hour movie, she's not really in it very much.
Well, also the cinematography in the house was so yellow. Why was that a choice?
That's what Mom said too. Mom was concerned about the color palette. Because they seem to stick on one color for a lot of different scenes.
It was like baby shit yellow. Like, why are you going to shoot a whole... You have Rome. You bring this great Roman vista. You want to put this whole scenery at the camera. You're going to make this set design, and then you're going to turn it all yellow. Like, that's just terrible.
That's one of the things I hated about Mad Max Fury Road, was that it was all shades of tan. Except for one blue section.
Wow. Isn't it post-apocalyptic and desert-like?
Yeah, it's dusty, but still, I mean, come on.
In the desert, I would assume tan and brown tones, but in Italy, in a beautiful, lush, rich villain's house, you wouldn't expect this yellow pall over everything. But I digress. So Bond is so happy after he's done humping it out, he calls Felix to clean up after himself. Sorry, he calls Felix to clean up after Bond. Oh, I called my friend Felix. He'll watch you. By the way, Felix never shows up in the movie. So
I know.
It's a misdirection. Like, you assholes.
There's so many things in this movie. Just they specifically reference things from better movies.
Yes.
But never actually include them.
Oh, yeah.
They want to bring back the past to get you interested, but it's all sleight of hand misdirection that's not pulled off well.
And then our next step is that we learn a little bit about the secret organization that Sciarra is part of, and
Bond goes to the Spectre Jamboree.
Well, it's the Spectre Car Show, is what it is.
Yes, that too.
Yeah,
it's the Spectre Car Show with Blade Runner.
Yes, but it's this is where the tone of this movie is a problem. This is where the jokey jokes start coming in. So you go to the Spectre meeting, and it reminds me of, and I think this was, let me see, I have notes here. Hold on.
This scene was nearly tense. It was nearly tense. And then they just shit all over that. Like, it was building up some tension. I thought, oh, this might go somewhere. And then Really? You're going to push his eyeballs in? Okay. I'm not, whatever.
But this is a Bond trope from way back. This was back when that's the thing about Spectre. Okay. Spectre is ridiculous. Spectre meetings, any meetings of these groups are ridiculous. Back when Donald Pleasance was Blofeld, and basically he had the one guy's chair just disappeared. It wasn't that how he died, unless I'm mixing up memories here. But yeah, I mean, basically that's the same thing. You know, you get to meet Dave Bautista as a bad guy, and you have this secretive meeting, and then we meet Christoph Waltz, who, now, I'm not going to suggest that he has a bad German accent because I think he probably is German. But
he is indeed.
But he doesn't have a sinister German accent. He's got one of the goofy German accents, which is great. He's a charming guy, but he is like too charming for his own good. And when he talks about the cuckoo, first of all, I get the whole cuckoo metaphor thing, but just the word cuckoo does not lend itself to gravity. So there's that problem.
Also, he has attempted the onomatopoeia with cuckoo.
Yeah. It's a problem.
You're right. He doesn't have a menacing voice.
No.
So he just ends up being like Stuart from Mad TV. Look what I can do.
Well, kind of.
He's the petulant little child. Yeah. The man child.
He's like, I am the criminal mastermind, but hey, James! Hello. Well, no, that's the wrong accent. Sorry.
Wow.
That's pretty. You went all James Corden
on us. Wrong James.
Yeah. So we know Christoph Waltz from, of course, Muppets Most Wanted, and Big Eyes, and Inglourious Basterds.
And something else. What else did?
He's been in a bunch of stuff recently. I think Inglourious Basterds was where he made his name. Again, he seems like a very friendly guy. I'd love to see a bunch of Christoph Waltz comedies.
Oh, that's what Jesse was yelling at me. He was in Django, which I haven't seen.
Neither have I. Seems long. Although no longer than this movie, I would imagine.
Oh, he's in The Green Hornet. Oh.
Yeah, what, did you like that movie?
No.
I mean, I know the world didn't like it, but I'm just wondering if it's even worth it. I may actually own it, because I think it was in the $3.74 bin. At Walmart at one point, but... okay, so this is where, of course, we meet Dave Bautista as Mr. Hanks. And we know Dave Bautista from the world of wrestling and also Guardians of the Galaxy and Blade Runner 2049. But Mr. Hanks is basically Jaws, right?
Yes.
I mean, he's going to come back too, right?
He is?
Yeah, he didn't die in this movie. It seems natural that they would bring him back, like Jaws came back. They might even...
You don't think he died?
Nope. Don't think so. You don't see him die. And this is a movie where you see people die, which is a tone problem. Okay, but so we have the poking the guy's eyes out, blah, blah, blah.
Then the ridiculous, unnecessary car race.
Okay, here's the problem with the car race.
There is zero point for this.
Oh, no.
Explain the point for this.
Because Bond movies have to have car chases, and they mapped this car chase out. They did a lot of work to get this car chase in Rome. This is a set piece of this movie. That was part of the reason.
Was it actually shot in Rome?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Wow. See, Jesse and I were just debating that, and I was like, I can't imagine they would have gotten permission to drive all over. But
apparently they had to get permission street by street.
Oh, of course.
Like, some streets you could have permission, some streets you couldn't have permission, so they had to reroute their car chases around, and yeah. Yeah, they did a lot of interesting work to get their big set pieces to come off.
But to no success. This was pointless.
I thought it was so boring. I thought this car chase was so boring.
Why throw the fucking Yakety Sax gadget fails? Why throw in the guy in the little tiny car that ends up sliding into the...
Because that justifies Bond's little smirk getting smacked off his face.
It's the worst.
And it sets up that joke about, you know, the music.
That's a problem. The jokes are problems.
Yes, it is.
The jokes are huge problems. Not that you, I mean, we've lived through plenty of Roger Moore Bond movies, so we know that Bond can be funny. And sometimes the humor works, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes there's a slide whistle when the car does a car stunt, and sometimes you've got a racist sheriff talking about flatheads or something. It's all fine if that's what the whole movie is like. But we go from this car chase, right, with the Yakety Sack stuff, and we talk about the Pale King and Franz Oberhauser, who's the guy in the shadows, and the Pale King is really Mr. White, who has been in every movie from Daniel Craig except for Skyfall, right? Because turns out we thought he was dead, but no, he's still alive. And
well, not for long.
Well, and he's so he's the whole quantum organization. So, and also Money talks to Bond about how his father died in an avalanche. And of course, Bond's parents died in an avalanche. So Bond goes to Austria, where Mr. White's living in a shack. And then we go to another place in Austria that we'll talk about in just a second. But I want to let you know that I wrote in my notes that you bring Bond to the Austrian Alps and he does not ski. That is pissing me off.
He skied in a plane. What are you talking about?
No, not the same thing.
Ah, STFU. Man, no. He skied in a fucking plane.
Nope.
Tore the wings off.
He tore the wings off. But yeah, no. Skidding a plane down over Snowy Mountain is not skiing.
Ah, whatever.
If he ripped one of the wings off and used it as sort of snowboard, that'd be fine. I'd be down. If he took just... If he had a plane that had skis instead of wheels and ripped one of those off. But no.
I think my bigger issue with the fact that he's a spy, he walks into the house, he sees this closed circuit camera, and then after all of his happenstance, doesn't delete the media off the camera.
Or burn the fucking house down.
Right, exactly.
This cannot harken back to Pigeon Double Taking. But why is there a straight out of Resident Evil 1 video game Raven jump scare?
Where they're eating his eyeballs?
No. The fact that the birds like fly like right up and jump scare him. I'm like, There is no need for that. It's a cheap way to create tension.
Because the rest of this movie is so genuine.
And then we have what is, it's an exposition scene, but it's very tense. And the end of it has an on-screen suicide. You can't have a Yakety Sax car chase followed by an on-screen suicide. It's there's some sort of rule about that.
Good taste.
It's a tone thing. You can't. I mean,
Yeah, but this movie bounces back and forth because then you go from that scene to C&M having their little dick fight where they're discussing, you know, the gathering of information through computers and data mining versus the gathering information through field work. So they're having their little pissing contest.
Yeah.
Which.
We cut away to exposition and then cut back to more boring scenes with Bond.
Yeah, they end up with the clinic on the mountain.
Yeah, which, by the way, the clinic on the mountain is from Her Majesty's Secret Service, right?
It is indeed. Yeah. Another stolen trope.
I was looking for Telly Savalas. It's like, come on, people.
Yeah, Bond should have shown up wearing a kilt.
Exactly, yes. And being gay, right?
Yes.
So
that would have also been a callback to Skyfall.
Oh yeah, there you go. Yeah. So anyway.
Bazing. Chandler. Bing.
No, we could have actually brought back I'm not gonna remember her name from Absolutely Fabulous as the Bond girl in one of those scenes. Just saying.
Joanna Lumley?
Yes. She was in the Telly Savalas kilt clinic.
Hey, I get credit for pulling that name out of my ass.
You do, that's great, yes.
Also, the fact that I've been watching Jesse watch Absolutely Fabulous on Hulu. So,
what does Jesse think of Absolutely Fabulous?
He loves it.
It's a weird thing, but it's fun.
I love it. I've always loved it. I still quote it to this day, but I'm crazy. So this is all in preparation to watch the movie that came out a year ago or two. Oh, I should add that to the podcast. That'd be fantastic.
Never seen an episode.
I wonder what the movie would be like if you've never seen the episode. Well, we'll find out. Put it on the calendar.
Sweetie, 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 darling, sweetie. La croix, sweetie. Drew has no idea.
I really don't.
Yeah.
We have the introduction of Mr. White's daughter, Dr. Madeline Swan, played by Leah Seydoux. From Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, blue is the warmest color, Beauty and the Beast, The Grand Budapest Hotel, and Inglourious Basterds.
Now, The Grand Budapest Hotel was good. I rather liked that.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
Never seen it.
Yeah.
Oh, it was a charming little movie.
So, other than, obviously, I wished for quite a while that she was actually Miss Swan.
Well, you know who, by the way, sorry to backtrack, you know who else is in Grand Budapest Hotel? Bray Fiennes.
Oh, yeah, excellent. At first, I thought, I thought that Christoph Waltz was the evil German concentration camps guy from Schindler's List, and then I realized, no, wait, that's M.
It is indeed. Yeah, so. Sorry, I'm going to interrupt. So, Grand Budapest Hotel, Ray Fiennes, F. Murray Abraham, Adrian Brody, William Dafoe, Jeff Goldblum, Harvey Keitel, Jude Law, Bill Murray, Edward Norton, Tilda Swinton. Seriously, okay. They have to put it on the list. It's a great movie.
Then we have the stupid chase scene because Mr. Hicks tries to kidnap Dr. Swan, blah, blah, blah.
And it's the most improbable ability to time out the exact moment to crash the plane through the barn to crash into the cars that just managed to just exactly hit in time. Like, Bond is one super spectacularly lucky son of a bitch.
No, he's tabled up all these things.
Uh-huh. But then it gets that whole, why wouldn't you put a bullet in the big guy that you think's dead if he's chasing you?
Yeah, well.
Because you have a license to kill. Use it! But no, then they're off to Le Mercat.
Well, okay, but hold on. Before we get to Tangier, let's talk about Q's spycraft in the world. I thought Q in the world was a good thing.
It was okay. I mean, it was unusual.
Yeah. I mean, granted, he put the Spectre ring on his on the trackpad of his laptop.
On his mouse pad.
Yeah, and then somehow came up with the fingerprints of everyone else who's ever been a Bond villain.
It was so boring.
Yes, I agree. This, though, is where the boredom really starts to kick in. We take the boredom to a next level in Tangiers.
It kicks you in the Marrakech.
Yeah, exactly. So we're in Morocco, which actually I think doesn't Ab Fab go to Morocco?
Yes, yeah, actually they do.
Yeah. So, but I bet you they have a more exciting time there.
They do.
Because literally...
A ritual with almonds and honey.
Yeah. Tangiers was a waste of our time.
Was all this spycraft? Like, he couldn't have figured out that Le Marrakech was a place?
Well, you know, place, person, whatever. I mean, you don't know. There's not a lot of context clues.
He's a spy.
Yeah, but he's not Miss Cleo. He's got to put these things together. Because Mr. White told him, talk to my daughter. She knows all about Le Marrakech. So, anyway. Also, I'm glad this took place in the present. Because had it taken place in Morocco in, middle of World War II, we'd have to bunch of explanation to do. Eventually, I want to talk about Casablanca, though, because it is one of my favorite movies ever.
We should talk about that sometime.
We should, yeah. I wish we could have resurrected our conversation, but like I said, I was thinking about putting in like an almost 45-minute lecture in the beginning by somebody else on Vichy government during World War II, because we got it so wrong, it was embarrassing. So basically. All the spycraft in the world, and Bond needs a mouse to help him find this hidden
room. A mouse and a splash of beer.
Yeah. Also,
why does the beer on the floor prove anything other than the floor is crooked in this old hotel?
And when he uses his fists to smash through the wall, because he's not going to need those fists for anything else ever, jackass. Then basically we open up the wall to find the little spy nest that's been sitting there collecting dust. So it's like a safe house or whatever. But all we learn from that, all we have is a TV, a tube TV, where we learn that the lone holdout in our Nine Eyes program South Africa. There's been a terrorist bombing in there, so they're going to turn their no to a yes, and suddenly we're going to have nine eyes. But other than that, and seeing the picture of the ski picture and the Bond and spoiler Blofeld, that's all? What are they there for? We have like a 15-minute detour.
They use that as the way to further the story so that he can track the sat phone.
Okay, all right.
And find the compound.
Okay, well, excellent. I was wondering, it baffled me why we were there. Because like I said, when Bond falls asleep during the scene, you know, that's not a great pacing. Well,
but these are all Blofeld's breadcrumbs to get Bond to come to him anyway. Yeah. Because that's his whole goal.
Exactly. Which, by the way, if you wanted to stretch for callbacks, is exactly what Bond did to Silva in Skyfall.
Imagine that.
Wait, can you answer me this?
Yeah.
I didn't figure this one out. When did Bond and Swan fall in love?
Yeah, she was pretty unhappy with him, and then apparently something about the air in Tangiers, whatever. I don't know. It's ridiculous. Like, they were supposed to have so much chemistry, but I didn't see any of it.
No, it's just like Munchausen's.
How do you have an almost 3-hour movie and no time for character development? Okay, actually, they really fell in love after the Jaws train fight. A la The Spy Who Loved Me.
That's true.
Because, you know.
Also true.
Near death actually does. You know, I can see people, you know, people get attracted. They have a common bond, you know, and the adrenaline's high.
I'm fine with that. I just don't understand when they fell in love.
Well, yeah, again.
And then we bounce back to another M&C pissing contest.
Yes.
And then we get that nice scene in the desert when they're waiting at the train station. Or I guess they're waiting after the train for their car that comes to get them. So they can go to the big compound and touch the meteorite.
Yeah, this is straight up. I mean, this is Blofeld. This is straight up like late 60s Bond villain bullshit. I mean, this is what the parodies are all about. Why they had to do this in 2015 just puzzles me. It changes the whole tone of the Daniel Craig Bond universe, right? I mean, there's been some more or less successful Bond villains. There's been some, you know, again, there's been a little bit of, like Quantum of Solace had a little bit of issues, but none of the villains have been over the top buffoons. But I'm sorry to say, but Blofeld's an over the top buffoon. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's amazing that he was able to hold this criminal mastermind together, considering that he can't manage, he really can't manage to even take a dent out of Bond.
Well, it's such a poor choice. I mean, you can have Blofeld be the bad guy. I mean, that's fine. You can set up all of the whole thing you want with On Her Majesty's Secret Service. But what offends me is that when you bring in Blofeld as the buffoon, it just ruins the whole Bond thing.
Yeah, and they did the Skyfall thing where you wait so long for the villain to be like truly revealed and for him to interact with Bond in a meaningful way. You wait so long, and it is such a letdown.
Oh, after Javier Bardem. I feel sorry for Christoph Waltz because I know he's a better actor than he gets a chance to be in this movie.
Maybe he was directed to do this, but he looked like he did not give a fuck about anything.
He is a villain in an Austin Powers movie.
Yeah, he was like mm-hmm. Leisure Suit Larry.
Yeah, yeah, and there's a place for that, just not in this movie.
Right.
And the whole bullshit about the being tied to a chair and everything, I think that's supposed to harken back to Dr. No. But come on. It had no payoff. He talked about consequences. Like, if I hit this nerve.
Being tied to a chair also harkens back to Casino Royale.
Well, there you go. Yeah.
With the much better ball torture scene.
Well, and you know, okay. So I appreciate the sound of a drill. Being something that ratchets up tension.
Yeah, but Casino Royale ball torture, he spends like 10 minutes of the movie recuperating in a hospital from it. This movie, he gets his head drilled into, as we're told, for very specific purposes to have very specific effects, and nothing happens.
Okay, but
he's just so manly that there's no effect from having his brain drilled into.
No, I think the way they tried to explain it in James Bonding, which I don't get either, but the idea I think was that Blofeld's saying, I am going to drill into nerves to make you feel pain. And oh, by the way, if I happen to hit this bundle or whatever, then you'll never remember anybody's face, blah, blah, blah. So that's just I could do this, but since it doesn't happen, it's bullshit that he even mentions it. Because you're waiting for it to happen. Like, how is Bond going to get out of this one? Well, it turns out, gee, if I stabbed you in the eye, you wouldn't be able to see. So I'm going to stab you in the cheek instead. No, that's the whole point. Come on, stop. Why did you tell me about the eye? This movie, the last act is... Well, sorry, this isn't even the last act. This is the second to last act.
Oh, yeah, no, because they get the whole, he's revealing his evil empire of minions.
Oh, and he's...
That looks like an Apple ad from the 80s.
Actually, I was worried about the ergonomics of those backless chairs.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, oh... Oh, Heidi, no IKEA for you.
Yeah.
And that was more Russian than German. But then we get that whole My Little Brother bullshit with the cuckoo thing. And you're right, that was, and then you get the, and then I wrote down, I wish I was watching The Fifth Element because this would have been a big bada boom.
At least The Fifth Element taught me a very important specific life lesson. This movie had nothing.
Except that, so now after this big old, desert, Bond happens to shoot the right bits to make the entire criminal mastermind organization explode.
Compound goes splody.
And we think we're rid of Blofeld. So we go back to London, though. And then Bond gets kidnapped and... Did Miss Swan break up with him before this kidnapping?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, okay.
Because of reasons.
Yes, of course. So, Mrs. Swan takes a hike, but then Bond is kidnapped, and M and Q and Moneypenny this whole last thing. Where Bond gets sent to the old MI6 and there's psychological torture elements going on and you've got a damsel attached. This is a plan designed by the Joker. When you talked about Bond being Batman, this is a Joker plot. This is exactly what the Joker would do. Not even necessarily in a good Batman movie, just in a Batman movie.
Maybe in the next Batman movie.
Maybe so.
Maybe Blofeld's going to be in that.
Well, and I don't care if it turns out that James Bond is Batman. Doesn't matter to me. Or if he's a Time Lord, because, of things. But, yeah. So we've got this whole, where Mrs. Swan is all, literally a damsel. And we get this whole thing with Blofeld comes back and then blah, blah, blah. Helicopters, Bond could have killed Blofeld, but
nobody
doesn't.
Nobody cares anymore.
No, not at all.
Nobody. Did Mom make it this far?
Oh, yeah.
Good for her.
Yeah, Mom was in. I was trying to talk her out of watching the movie with me at the same time as I was talking her into watching the movie with me because it's this is really just my homework, but I'll be happy to watch it. She's like, no, it'll be great. It'll be fine. Because we watched it before. So... But still, it's great. No, we were both in. Neither of us fell asleep either, which is good. Even when Bond did, which I say again. So I've got a question, though, about the end.
Falling asleep could have only improved this movie.
Yeah, well, I would have shortened it a little bit. So they drive off in the restored DB5. But so are we to presume, from what you're talking about earlier, Brother Jay, that Dr. Swan is Tracy or is not Tracy?
Well, equivalent to Tracy.
Yeah, I was obviously, but is she going to be the one who gets killed at the end of Honor, Majesty's Secret Service?
If they're trying to pull a reboot out of their ass, then yes.
I mean, because the one thing about Bond is that he gets married.
They've already done that with Vesper Lynd.
True. Yeah.
Exactly.
No, but I mean, in the Bond literature, there was a Vesper and there was a Tracy, because Bond was never married to Vesper. Bond was married to Tracy.
Correct.
And you could get a lot of mileage out of "I used to be married." But, you know, the Daniel Craig Bond is broken anyway. He was broken before Vesper. He's broken after Vesper. He's been broken since Vesper, that's for sure. So is he just getting over Vesper and on to Miss Swan? And then Kate McKinnon's going to come in and cap her?
I really hope she is playing her Ghostbusters role.
Yeah, perfect. I haven't seen it, but...
She's the only thing worthwhile in that movie.
Yeah, I'm sure I will get to it eventually. The first Ghostbusters has problems, too, as it turns out on a rewatch, but it's still fun.
Yeah, but at least it
only
was
starting
honest.
From the very opening scene.
Yeah, yeah. So, Spectre, Brother Jay, your verdict?
I actually, this is the only Bond movie I don't own.
I can remedy that.
Please don't. I don't have a way to quantify that. This is, I think if you've never seen a Bond film ever, it might be okay. But having just watched all of the other Bond movies before this, obviously, you know, not like right before this, but having watched all the Bond movies before this, this is barely, I think this is incomplete, which is, it's over complete, but it's incomplete. I can't even give it a grade.
But surely this is not the worst Bond movie.
It's not the worst Bond movie.
I think it's the most disappointing.
It definitely is the most disappointing. Absolutely, yeah, and that's the problem. This coming after Skyfall is a problem. Yeah. It's like Quantum of Solace coming right after Casino Royale was a problem.
So is this turning into the Star Trek franchise where only every other movie is good?
Maybe.
Casino Royale was good, Quantum of Solace not so good, Skyfall good, Spectre not so good. And then the next one will be good, maybe. Maybe.
And then the one after will have some sort of crazy gravity boots?
Rocket boots.
Drew, was it worth it?
No, this movie's terrible. Coming after Skyfall, it's a travesty. You know, bringing back all of the talent, including the director, this should have been a great movie, but they totally blew it. And I don't even fully understand why. It felt completely hollow. I really believe they were just going through the motions. So I'm glad they all made a crap load of money, I'm sure. Good for everybody involved, but this is terrible. I've now sat through it twice. I don't ever want to watch it again. Yeah, having watched it so close to Skyfall did not do it any favors. Yeah, I hope Daniel Craig comes back to do another Bond movie, so that
just so he can redeem himself.
Yeah, so this isn't the last part of his legacy, but yeah, it's terrible. I cannot recommend this to anybody. It's not worth your time. It's so long. It's so boring. It doesn't make any sense. They try and tie it to all the other movies for no reason. You didn't need that. You didn't need Blofeld to say it was always me, for him to be menacing. You just needed to have him have actual stakes, real motivation that made sense, and a willingness to do something truly horrific instead of something strictly cartoonish.
Exactly. So exactly.
We never got it. And
it's just okay, yeah, you're right. So one thing to bear in mind is that to give that line about it was always me who's been the source of all of your pain, you got to do something bad first. You have to like kick a dog or drown a baby or something. Sorry, I apologize to anybody who is offended by me suggesting that dogs get kicked. No, you're right. You have to be bad guy first, and then you be super bad guy. But he was not. I mean, and he said cuckoo. I can't take anybody seriously who uses cuckoo more than once in my entire conversational life with them.
And the way he was operating his super torture device, he looked like somebody's grandpa trying to operate a computer for the first time.
Exactly, exactly.
There was no menace at all.
No, no, because he was charming, but yeah, with nothing underneath it. Bond was way more menacing than Blofeld was. Just that little smirk made Bond more menacing. Okay, but can I try a Brother Jay-ism?
Okay.
So it's as hollow as a piñata. It's like one of those sugar skulls from the Dia de los Muertos that, with a little bit of rain, just evaporates into nothing. Not evaporates, actually, just crumbles. I can't pull it off. Sorry. I'm no Brother Jay.
Melts?
Melts. It just melts. It's a sticky mess. Bond is always leaving sticky messes all over the place.
Ew. Don't cock it up.
So, yeah. Spectre. A letdown.
That's an understatement.
Did Sam Smith win an Oscar?
He might have.
Is this an Oscar-winning Bond movie?
I don't think so.
Well, this actually had... I mean, part of the reason why this movie was not probably as... I mean, it did fine, I'm sure, at the box office, but it didn't do as well as, say, Skyfall, is because this came out the same time that Star Wars came out, right?
Original gross was only $200 million in the U.S., and it was budgeted at $245 million.
Yeah, worldwide, though, this is close to a $1 billion movie, no?
No, I don't think so. I think it was only like $700 or $800 million.
Huh. Well, still, the Broccoli's will have enough money to make another one. And Daniel Craig was a producer in this one.
Sam Smith did win the Oscar.
Did he really?
So this is an Oscar award-winning. And you know, okay,
it's not an Oscar-winning song though.
Well, it's an Oscar-winning movie now because of the song.
So, do you think this should have won versus Adele?
Adele did not win for Skyfall. Who won that year? I mean, I believe she didn't win. I just don't know who she was up against that could have won.
No, Adele won.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Did she?
So there you go. Yeah. That's fine. That's good. Now, Sheryl Crow didn't win, right?
They both... are you sure?
I don't think this is a bad song. I really don't. I think this is a fine song. It's just not Adele.
I like the song.
And maybe I'm a sexist guy that I want a woman to sing the Bond theme. I'm trying to think of all the Bond themes...
Paul McCartney, Live and Let
that
Die.
That was great. No, you're right. Live and Let Die. But I don't know. I think probably my favorite.
Chris Cornell.
It's fine.
I mean, you shut your whore mouth.
No, sure. It's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just, you know, it's not any better than this, though. The Chris Cornell song is no Adele. So, are we on to housekeeping?
Housekeeping.
Can I talk about two movies right up front?
Sure.
Been watching. I'm on a winter break with my daughter, and I've decided, because the second half of the winter break is with Kelly, but she has to work this first week of it. So, you know, we've been trying to go out and do something silly every day or whatever, but otherwise I'm not trying to do any heavy lifting because it's just a staycation. Yeah. So I've been watching a bunch of movies, and two movies I watched in the same day that turns out have the same sort of opening premise, but are vastly different movies, are Run, Lola, Run, the German movie from late 80s, early 90s.
I thought it was later than that.
Oh, may have been. I don't know. And Killer Joe. Have you heard of or seen Killer Joe?
Nope.
Is that the Matthew McConaughey movie?
Yes. Matthew McConaughey.
I've seen it.
Yeah.
It's a weird movie.
It is a weird movie. It's also the same basic setup with Run, Lola, Run. Lola gets a call from Miro, I think, her boyfriend, who was entrusted by a gangster with like $100,000 he needed to deliver, but he left it on a train by accident. So they have 30 minutes to come up with $100,000 or he's going to be killed by this gangster. And in Killer Joe, we have Emil Hirsch as Thomas Hayden Church's son and Gina Gershon's like stepson, who... has owed money to a local bad guy, $5,000, and he has to come up with it in like 2 days.
Run, Lola, Run was 98, by the way.
Oh, okay. So I was only 10 years off. So Run, Lola, Run, maybe it's partly because the version I saw was badly dubbed into English, because I think it's a German language movie.
It is.
And it's kind of a goofy story, but I thought the soundtrack was the best of everything. It gave me a very Chumbawamba feel. like German techno Chumbawamba kind of thing. Yeah. But also, like, the kind of, like, Chumbawamba's Mary Mary song, which is pretty great. So that kind of ran through it. And then Killer Joe is a feel-bad movie.
Yes. Like,
where Run Lola Run's a kind of a feel-good movie. Killer Joe's kind of a feel-bad movie. With good performances, though. Yeah. There is a scene at the end that I won't give away, but Gina Gershon's character has to simulate sex on a chicken bone. And it's a very tense scene. And this was a stage play, by the way. Killer Joe was. And so I thought it was her or somebody else that turned down the role on the stage production because she didn't want to do that 8 times a week. Which seems fair. Yeah, reasonable. So I liked them both for different reasons. One's goofy, one's not goofy.
And there's a really uncomfortable plot about, I don't remember, was it like statutory rape?
I think she was of age, but she was mentally not all there.
Okay. So she was older, but she was simple.
Yes, very simple.
Okay.
But maybe not as simple as she led people on. Who knows? Yeah, the whole family sort of smacked of simplicity.
Yeah. Yes. That movie was an exercise in discomfort.
Yeah. And yet it had great performances.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's my housekeeping. Run, Lola, Run, and Killer Joe.
Oh, man. I saw Ferdinand.
Oh. Did you not like it?
It was all right. John Cena's a terrible voice actor.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he wasn't terrible, terrible. I thought it was actually, what's that guy? Seth Rogen.
You thought he was Seth Rogen?
Yes.
Oh, I thought his voice actually sounded a lot like Patton Oswalt.
I didn't get that, but yeah.
Yeah, well, you will the next time you watch it. But it was all right.
I mean, I don't want to fight other bulls, blobbity blue. Yeah, that was fine.
Also, another fun stuff. I'm off this week with my children because there's no school. And for Christmas, our mother was nice enough to get them ice skates. So they've really been wanting to go ice skating during this fun little cold snap. So the last 2 days, we've gone out to one of the nearby elementary schools, and we've been ice skating in single degree weather.
Are you ice skating as well?
No. Oh. I do not own ice skates.
Yeah. Well, good that they're out there doing it.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Good for them.
But good they're for still them young enough you can't just stay in the car.
Young little metabolisms that keep them warm.
Yes. Brother Jay, housekeeping?
We had Christmas Eve dinner out. Portland was experiencing an ice storm, snowstorm, all day, into the evening, into the night. So we were the only four at the restaurant for over 2 hours, which was nice. A little disconcerting because there was more wait staff and cook staff than there were patrons.
Does that mean you got extra thick slices of prime rib?
I didn't get prime rib. The boys did, but I'll have to send you the picture. I got chicken Dijon, and the chef was so bored that he wrote in Dijon sauce on my chicken, "Happy Holiday."
That's awesome.
Was there like a winky emoji next to it?
I don't remember. It was, I think there was a smiley face.
Happy holidays, Jason Anderson and the boys.
It was,
see other breast.
it was different, but, it was just odd.
Did you eat cake?
Of course.
Okay, because the place is called Prime Rib and Chocolate Cake, right?
Yes.
Oh, that's okay. That's horrible.
That is creepy.
Can you send me that picture?
I will.
Okay.
Is that going in the liner notes?
Yeah, and also maybe on the Facebook page.
And we were in the restaurant, and of course, we're watching the snow fall and fall and fall, and it's ice and snow. So the drive home took us a lot longer, so unfortunately I wasn't able to call an experience for Christmas with the family, which is fine because I talked to mom and dad for a little bit. And then the next morning, I got up and drove, boyfriend Jesse and I drove out to his brother's house. And so it was Christmas morning with his dad and his brother and his sister-in-law and their kids. And it was I got to experience Christmas with a different family, which is difficult because I have a whole bunch of social anxiety. So being sober and then having to drive through icy streets was probably, you know, I was full of adrenaline. But in Oregon, of course, the roads aren't maintained. It's just sheet ice everywhere. So it's pretty terrible. And once I hit the bridge to enter Washington State, because this was in Vancouver, up in Vancouver area, it's just water. There's no snow. It's just water and slush. But everybody's still driving 20 miles an hour. So I'm apoplectic. But Christmas was good. We had a good, it was a good time. It was good expanding of my social anxiety skills. So I coped. We came home and just kind of watched a couple movies and vegetated. I made boyfriend Jesse watch A Christmas Story because he'd never seen it.
Oh, what do you think?
He liked it. He thought it was very cute. It was very chuckle worthy. And then we watched Oblivion.
And?
He didn't like it.
And I've never seen it. I haven't, but I've never seen it.
Is it going on the calendar? I don't know. I like it. I don't know if I want to torture anybody with it because it's not a great film, but I thought it was a good film. He was trying to equate that it was a ripoff of Moon, but I was trying to say it wasn't really kind of the same. So we were arguing about that right before we started recording tonight. But and then Tuesday was day back at work, and of course, because all the snow and ice in Portland and our lack of ability to maintain the damn city roads was pandemonium at work, and so people didn't want to come to work. And I said, you know what, if you can get to the main roads are fine. You can get to work just fine. Also, the buses are running, and y'all have bus passes free, courtesy of your employer. So it's been kind of a long week like that. But but I got in the mail from my younger brother a pair of Bluetooth headphones, which are quite awesomely amazing. So I'm enjoying those very much.
Sweet. Are those the one you discussed before?
Yeah.
Yeah, because, Jason, you mentioned you were shopping for some, it sounded like, expensive Bluetooth headphones. And these are, I think they're really good and they're super cheap.
What's the brand name? So,
Origin.
Origin.
Okay. Interesting. Let me know how they are.
They're awesome. They have 12 hours of playtime.
Cool.
Which is easily double of what I already had. The weird thing that I'm adjusting to is the fact that they talk. So that's a little weird for me. But the other thing is that the silicone buffers that lodge in your ear are so good that I can't hear anything. So I've had the shit scared out of me twice now.
You see, that's good on a plane, but not so good, like, you know, like walking in traffic, maybe.
Well, I don't wear my headphones out like that. I don't wear them outside. I'm either in my office or around the house, but as long as I don't have a knife or something. There will be something in the mail for both of you shortly, which you can both open on the pod in a couple weeks, but.
Oh, this is a fun tradition. I want to keep this up.
I got to figure out how to mail them. So, yeah. So I'm working on that.
Cool.
Otherwise, it's
does it require DOT labeling?
No.
Okay. Good.
There are no hazardous materials.
That's good.
Actually, there's not much weight either. So, what else? It's almost 50 degrees here right now, so it's nearly tropical. But it's been so cold lately, so we figured out that if we take the sweater off the dog before we take him outside, he does his business rather quickly when it's cold. So We've been using that as leverage.
It's 14 degrees outside.
Yeah. Well, that's what it had been here. So.
It's warming up.
Yeah.
otherwise, Christmas was good here. It was pretty low key. I got the boys Spheros 2, so
excellent.
We were playing with those and torturing the dog, and so it looked like the nieces had fun with them. So
yeah, I think Journey's going to try to play with hers in the garage while I try to clean up the garage tomorrow.
My girls are so stubborn. So there's a tilt control function that I think is way easier than like the joystick.
Oh.
But my girls are not having any of it.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's like, what I get.
Like, no, it's easier. You should try it. And they're like, no.
It's so funny.
I was like, all right.
Oh, I wonder where they get that trait from.
Yeah, their mother.
Hey, guess what they showed on HDNet over Christmas Day? I got to watch most of it at my in-law's house.
National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation?
No, it was Christmas with the Hatfields and McCoys.
Wow.
Like with Kevin Costner and Bill Paxton and Tom Berenger.
That was like a whole miniseries, right?
Yeah, yeah. I watched...
It's supposed to be pretty good.
I think probably well over half of it, maybe more, actually. It was good. It was actually quite good. I watched like the last... Like half of the last chapter, and then I think the first chapter and a half, and I think it was just three nights long or three segments long. Only missed that middle part in there. But yeah, it was quite interesting. It made me look up Hatfields and McCoys. There's a rich history depending on who you believe. I mean, definitely people died on both sides for years and years and years.
Family feuds.
Yes.
Other than that, things are pretty much status quo here. I'm not dying anymore, so that's an improvement.
That's a happy improvement.
Yeah.
Happy New Year to all our listeners, and a great 2018 coming up.
Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages, or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.